So, you know, I warned you in advance, right? And I'm not. I ended up preparing more than I intended to. I was planning not to think about it at all until 15 minutes before. But I did think a little bit, but not enough. This is not a class. If I mess up, so be it. So today is complicated material, and I have a good chance of messing it up. This said, so our goal is to prove excision, which is the one remaining thing for the computation of homology groups of spheres. And excision says that if you have a homology of X relative to A, and deep inside A is buried something that looks like who cares what, we don't care, we can remove it. So deep inside means that its closure is contained in the interior of A. Once this is the case, you can remove it, and relative homology of X relative to A is the same as relative homology of X minus V with A minus V. And I mentioned last time why this is more complicated than it seems, so it's actually a technicality at the end of the day. So, okay? So basically, one map is obvious. Going in this direction is obvious. Because basically, as a set, X minus V, A minus V includes to X comma A, so you can just map simplices directly. So, right, if you have something that doesn't touch V, meaning it's here, you can just map it to itself over here. So, this map is obvious. The other map is not obvious, and I mentioned that there are sort of three cases to consider. And the three cases are simplices that are away from V, but not included in A. Or in fact, if they're included in A, it's fine. So long as they're away from V, I can just, so now I'm here. If they're away from V, I can map them to themselves. The second case to consider is simplices that are completely in A. If they touch V or if they don't touch V, I don't care, because if they're completely in A, they were ignorable to start with. So I just map them to zero. So this one goes to itself. This one goes to zero. But the problem is with simplices that are neither fully in A nor outside of V. So such simplices, person who just came in, there is a handout. So such simplices, I just don't know what to do with. And what we will see later is that the procedure is to take such a simplex and break it into many tiny pieces so that each piece knows where to go. But I have to also explain why this is a legitimate procedure, how it can be done, and why it's a legitimate procedure. Okay. So all of this is after 10 or 15 minutes of Boxing Day. So you see, I told you last time that it's important to open boxes. So you don't really understand things if you stay at the level of, you know, this is a chain of lemmas. You always have to open a few layers deep. Okay? So by a chain of lemmas that we've proven so far, the n minus first homology of Sn minus 1 is isomorphic to Hn of Sn. So these are lemmas that we've proven so far, and one lemma that we haven't yet proven, but I think I've indicated the general direction, so it shouldn't be too hard, or it shouldn't be impossible to believe. Okay? But still, what's going on here? Let's try to visualize this. Okay? So, what's happening here? So, let me start. So, I'm not sure which dimension I should start in. Maybe I should start with H1 of S1. Because somehow H0 of S0 is a bit too degenerate. So, H1 of S1, here is S1. H1 of S1 is generated by the cycle that looks like basically one simplex is an interval. Take the interval that wraps on around exactly once as something in homology, it will have no boundary because the boundary will be the beginning point and the end point. The difference of the beginning point and the end point is the same point, so you get zero. So that's what you get here. How will it transfer through this chain of isomorphisms to here? And you know, once I'm done with this, you can think about it in one dimension up or down as you wish. Okay? So the next place to go is the long exact sequence of the pair dn sn minus 1. And it takes us to hn of dn sn minus 1. Oh my god, what was it? Okay, so what was the long exact sequence of dn sn minus 1? If I remember right, it was sn minus 1 homology maps into, so you know, maybe I'll even write it this way. Homology in any dimension of hn minus sn minus 1 goes to homology in any dimension of dn goes to relative homology in any dimension of dn sn minus 1 goes to homology in dimension star minus 1, whatever that was, minus 1, of sn minus 1 goes to h star minus 1 of dn. And then the isomorphism came from the fact that the homology of a disk is equal to 0. So this is equal to that is equal to 0. And so these two are isomorphic. And the isomorphism actually, so I want to go from left to right, but the easy way to state the isomorphism is using this map, which goes the other way, right? It goes from here to here. So what was this map? Well, that was a box that we've already opened. So that was the boundary map from relative homology to the homology of the subset. But let me remind you what the picture was. The picture was if we had X and a class in X relative to A is a thing with possibly boundary, but whose boundary is zero in the quotient, so whose boundary is in A. And then the map was to map such a creature to its boundary, which is in A. Okay? So now I want to go, okay, so but now my situation is, so my picture now is, this is my disk, and A, so this is dn, it's just a disk, and its boundary is A, and I'm looking for a thing in the disk, its boundary, whose boundary is this circle that I've drawn here. But it's clear what it is. By the way, everything, sorry, if you think anything hard is going to happen, you're wrong. I mean, everything is total triviality. The point is somehow the point is that if you don't realize that it's utter triviality, you think of it as black boxes. It isn't, okay? So anyway, what's the homology class? So what is the two-dimensional object whose boundary is in A? Well, it's clear, right? It's the full membrane. Basically, the whole thing is the thing who is the class in Dn Sn minus 1. It's the thing whose boundary is that. So actually, I'm drawing it in dimension, whatever dimension I'm drawing, but everything is actually true in, works in complete generality. Okay, now, the next step was to sort of homotopy. It was to use homotopy invariance. So to use, basically to turn this sort of thin boundary into a collar. Hand out over there.
In this case, it's clear that there could only be one object which has the boundary we need. But take for example the other case. Suppose there's like a double donut with the disk taken out, and that disk is the same one as the disk the single donut. So then you have two objects with the same boundary in A, and then going back now is not well defined. Or maybe it's not
so
clear.
So in other situations, it is not the case. Indeed, sometimes it is not the case that this map and that that these two are isomorphic.
Uh-huh.
Okay? If you replace this by X. Generally speaking, relative homology of X relative to A is not isomorphic to the homology of A. In our case, it is.
The case. Yeah. Okay.
Okay? Because we know something about the middle term.
Yes.
Okay? Okay, so next, the next step was to kind of put a collar around the boundary. Okay? So use homotopy invariance to turn it into a picture where instead of just sort of a Sn minus 1, we're looking at Sn minus 1 cross an interval, meaning an annulus. And again, I'm not sure if annulus is 1n or 2n. Somebody said 2n's, but I don't know. It feels wrong to me. Anybody has a... Well, okay. Can you check Google something?
You might be bigger.
What?
I think you'll be bigger.
I think you're right.
2n's? Okay, good.
Wikipedia says annulus or annulus.
Ah, excellent. Okay, so anyway, this is just homotopy invariance. We just have to in fact, this includes into here. And the, you know what, maybe I won't even go through it. Basically, now we have the same kind of membrane with rim as before. But now the rim is free to live somewhere on anywhere in the annulus. So that's the picture once we've gone to here. Now, excision. So, which side of excision is this? This is the easy or the hard side? So, you know, maybe I should have indicated if we're going in the easy direction or the hard direction of the flow. So here, we were going against the flow, right? The easy map is from here to here, and we went against the flow. Here, it sort of doesn't matter. An excision, this is the excised part already. So this is actually the easy map. Okay? So what do things look like now? Here, so here we have the upper hemisphere, sorry, the sphere, and we mod out by the, we do it relative to the lower hemisphere. So X is the whole thing, and A is the lower half. And the part that we would be excising is the part which is below that line. So A is below that line, and V is below that line. Okay? So indeed, if we excise this V, we get that picture. So the easy mapping excision is from the excised side to the unexcised side. And the map is simply, you map things to what to what they are. So you don't do anything. So again, the answer here is, so the class that we get here is the class that looks like the rim is somewhere in this equatorial region, and we have the whole upper hemisphere otherwise. Okay? Now we should be using the long exact sequence of Sn dn minus. What was that? It was dn minus goes to Sn goes to, I'm not even writing which homology groups it is, okay? Goes to Sn rel dn, no, the n is up and the minus is down. And then going to dn minus back again. And here, this was the trivial thing, and that was diisomorphism. So diisomorphism was induced from the obvious map from Sn to Sn relative its boundary. So the easy direction of flow here is that direction, and we're going against the direction. Anyway, what is the map from Sn to here? Let me add the homology groups, the homology symbol. So what is the map from the homology of Sn to the homology of Sn relative to the boundary? So I said, if you had a class here which had no boundary, to start, that's something in the homology of X. It's something that has no boundary. Then it gets mapped to, then you just map it to itself. Okay? So I am looking for something in the sphere which has no boundary and which would be mapped to the cracked egg that we have here. Okay, the cracked, right, it's cracked at the bottom. Usually you crack them at the top, okay? But the cracked eggshell. Okay? So, what do? Well, you close the crack. So basically, you close the crack, and by closing the crack doesn't change anything because I've done it, because all the simplices that I've added in order to close the crack were inside A. My A is the whole southern hemisphere. So there's zero anyway. I didn't change anything. But now I have what looks like so in fact, I should have done it already here. I should have, well, okay, it's not clear what picture I'm drawing, is it? But anyway, adding all these simplices doesn't change the class, and it gives you a class which is closed, which is a cycle, already in the sphere. So that's it. We got the sphere itself. Which is more or less what we expected, right? So I mean, again, all of this is a triviality, but I wanted to go through this triviality because, well, that's the point of opening boxes. So to see that it is a triviality, okay? Are you with me? Okay, good. Let me take pictures, and then. Start with the actual proof of excision. Okay. So, I already told you what's the idea. The idea is to show that you can compute homology with small simplices. You don't have to, so sort of, if you somehow are able to quantify, to give meaning to homology with small simplices, then then maybe we can get away from the problem. So really, I need to define a new homology theory, which is homology with small simplices. And then, show you that it's the same as the theory that we've used so far. And that within it, this problem is trivial. So, definition. So suppose you, U is an open cover of X, okay? Is an open cover of some topological space X. So really I mean that U is a set of open sets U alpha, so each U alpha is open, and the union over alpha of all of these U alphas is the full thing. Okay? So I will define Cn up U of X. So the nth chain space where the chains are small to be the collection of all sum ai sigma I, just as before, such that each ai is still in Z, each sigma I is still a simplex, so it's a map from delta n into X, and such that the image of sigma I is contained in U alpha for some alpha. So basically, so for every I there is an alpha such that the image is contained in that alpha. So it's clear why you should be thinking of it as homology with small simplices, right? So if X is big and you cover it with many, many open sets, then the condition is that you're not allowed to use big simplices, you're only allowed to use small simplices. Okay? The boundary map is defined in the same way. And it's clearly well defined, or it clearly maps Cn small to Cn small, because the boundary, the image of the boundary is contained in the image of the original simplex. So if you have a small simplex, its boundary is also made of small simplices. So the boundary map is the same. Homology is defined in the same way. So HUn is defined to be kernel modulo image, but now in CU. In CU. So I'm not putting the indices, it's clear what they are. Okay? Relative homology makes sense just the same. Literally the same. So in other words, you just define Cn small of X relative to A to be Cn of X relative small relative to modulus Cn of A, small. Everything is the same. All the long exact sequences, short exact sequences, everything is the same. Okay? So the only thing I really... Okay, sorry. So now I need to tell you two things. First of all, why does it solve our problem? And second, why is it not changing anything? Okay? So I claim that in excision, that excision... Sorry, so maybe I'll, first of all, maybe I'll state the theorem that says that nothing changes. So, theorem, you see, I promise to be confused, okay, so I'm not doing things in the right order. So, theorem, the obvious inclusion, so you have an inclusion map, C star U goes to C U, sorry, not U. So, right, if you have a small simplex, it's in particular a simplex. So you have an obvious inclusion map like this. And the claim is that it induces an isomorphism. H small simplexes star into H star. Okay? So, first of all, it clearly induces a map. Whenever you have a map between chain complexes, it induces a map between their homologies. So you have a map from homology with small complexes, simplexes into homology. Said differently, if you have a cycle here made of small simplexes, it's still a cycle here. It's still a cycle here. Okay? So clearly there is an induced map, and the assertion is that this map is an isomorphism. And this is true both in the normal case and in the XA case. Okay, so both in the routine case and in the relative case. Okay? Okay, so given that, I can give you a proof of excision. Proof of excision. So, basically I need to tell you what I mean by small simplexes. So small simplexes are either the ones that are away from V, or the ones that are inside A. These are the ones I know how to manage. Okay? So take your open cover to be and the open cover by exactly two sets. The exterior of the closure of V, so X minus the closure of V, so that's an open set, and the interior of A. This is a cover by by what? By the requirements, right? The closure of V is contained in the interior of A. So it follows that under this cover, I want to prove excision using small simplexes for this cover. So basically, I want to show you that Hn of x small relative to this of x minus v, comma a minus v, so that this map, when you map it to Hn small of x comma a, I want to show you that this is an isomorphism. So I want to so this map is already given. I just need to construct an inverse map. So the construction is if sigma, if a specific simplex is contained in x minus v, then, or in fact, X minus V closure, then you map it, so this is like this case, so you map it to itself. And if a specific, and otherwise, so if a simplex is not contained here, then it must be contained in the other open set, because all simplexes are contained in one of the open sets. So if the simplex sigma is contained in the interior of A, then it just doesn't matter what you map it to, because it's going to be, sorry, then it doesn't matter. Then it's the zero simplex anyway, so you just map it to zero. And you can check that this is an inverse map. That's all. Okay. Sorry, I mean, I actually already said that, so that's not... okay. Anyway, but now I need to prove. So I need to prove this assertion. So I'll actually prove. Well, okay. So in principle, all I need to do is to tell you how to cut a big simplex into tiny pieces. And I suppose there is something called the Lebesgue covering lemma. So which is true for compact sets. So the simplex itself is a compact set. And the Lebesgue covering lemma says that if you have an open cover of a compact set, so basically take the global open cover, I mean this global open cover U, well here I use it for only two sets, but it could have been a huge open cover, but still you can restrict your attention to one individual simplex, the one you want to break. And now it's covered by finitely many open sets, and the Lebesgue covering lemma says that if you cover a compact metric space, so the space itself X might not even be metric. However, the simplex is a metric space. So if you cover a compact metric space by finitely many sets, by open sets, then there is some small number epsilon, so that every set of diameter less than epsilon would be contained in one of those sets. So all I have to do is to break up this simplex into tiny sets, which are themselves simplices, whose diameter is less than that epsilon. Okay? So the reason I said all of that is to is because sort of, I mean, we're using metric properties and we're using compactness in a context which is overall neither metric nor compact. However, we're using it on an individual simplex which is both metric and compact. So that's fine. So basically, it makes sense to say that if I break it into sufficiently many pieces, each one will be contained in one of the in one of the sets of the open cover. Yes.
Okay, dumb question, but what is the metric on the simplex? The induced metric from
R n plus one.
But
the metric, the
induced metric on it.
You're mapping it in.
Mapping in and just looking at the...
It's mapping in where? The simplex is in Rn plus 1. Delta n, I'm breaking up in the domain space. This simplex is the image of an ordinary simplex.
Oh. So
if you pull back the open cover, you get a finite cover of that.
Okay.
I break it here so that it would be small, and then the images, it doesn't even make sense to say that the images are bigger or small in a metric sense, because this isn't a metric space, but it's enough that but it's enough that I know that the prime, that the broken pieces live inside one piece of the pre-image of the color.
Yes.
Okay? Good. So that's the sort of, okay, the problem now is why does breaking a simplex, why is it at all a legal operation? So the beginning is easy, but then it gets a bit complicated. So I claim, so let's think for a moment about H1, okay? So I claim that for the purpose of homology, this line and that same line broken into two are the same, okay? Or broken into five, if you wish. Okay. So I drew them one below the other, but I actually meant that they are on top of each other. It's the same line, but broken into two pieces. So what does it mean that it's the same in homology? It means that. So what was HN? Right, HN was the kernel. I'm not regarding the kernel right now. I want to say it's so to be the same means that their difference is an image. Okay, so in other words, if I give you a path in a topological, well, you know, topological space hardly plays a role anymore. But suppose I give you a path. I want to tell you that if you break, I want to say that if you break it into two pieces, then the whole, I want to say that the whole path gamma minus the left part plus the right part is would be zero modulo the image. So is the boundary of some triangle. Which triangle would it be? So it would be the degenerate triangle whose vertices are A, B, and C. Right? Just perhaps it's easier to do it in the parameter space. So this is the image of some interval. Put a triangle like that on top of the interval, project it down to the interval. So this is gamma. I want to tell you what is tau. So tau will be this projection composed with gamma. The image is one-dimensional. You no longer see that it's a triangle, but the definition of a triangle was a map from a triangle. I didn't care if the image was degenerate. The image could have been a single point. By the way, that's the origin. That's part of the reason why it's called singular homology. I'm allowing singular things. I mean, the map sigmas are not in any way smooth or good or anything. Anyway, but so I just told you what tau was. Tau is this composition. And what's the boundary of tau? Well, it's this edge, which is gamma, and you can check the signs, minus gamma left plus gamma minus plus gamma right. Okay? So this half plus that half. Okay? Is the picture clear? This picture actually stops working in dimension one more. So suppose you had a triangle and I wanted to cut it in half. And I wanted to tell you that the, or should I draw it this way, or, well, no, let's, I should have a left and a right. So, suppose I had a triangle, now it's called tau, and I wanted to show you that tau is equal in homology to tau L minus tau R. So in other words, I wanted to show you that tau minus tau L plus tau R is equal to zero in homology, So is equal to the boundary of some, what should we call the one dimension up from a triangle? Simplex, sigma. Okay? Well, just by counting, it's not going to work. The boundary of a simplex has of a two-dimensional, of a three-dimensional simplex, right? If it is to be two-dimensional, this has to be three-dimensional. The boundary of a three-dimensional piece, simplex, has four pieces, and there are only three pieces here. Okay? So, and in fact, if you try to do the obvious thing, so the obvious thing is to turn this thing 3D. Okay, so you think sort of making a, building a tent and on top of that, where the where this pole is vertical, and okay, and you just collapse it down. So the three of the faces of that tent, this one, that one, and the back one, go to tau left, tau r, and the big tau. But the door becomes some degenerate triangle, but not the zero triangle. Okay? So basically what remains is a technicality. Okay, what remains is how do you do subdivision in a way that will work in all dimensions and produce the right results. Okay? So, are you with me?
Good.
And it's really a technicality. And the answer is beautiful and colorful, but it's still just a technicality. Okay, so... something is wrong. Okay. So first thing is to notice that when you subdivide even in these pictures, all the action happened in Euclidean spaces. We did whatever we did here or here, project down, cut in pieces. Everything happened in Euclidean spaces and then got composed with a map, with the original simplex mapping into the topological space. So really, I don't really need to tell you how to subdivide simplexes inside a topological space. I just have to tell you how to subdivide simplexes in Euclidean space. So it's a Euclidean problem. So let me formalize it. So, definition so affine chains in Euclidean space, so or in a vector space, so given a vector space V, which has nothing to do with the V here, okay, sorry for the mix-up, I want to define, I want to tell you what are affine simplexes in V. So Cn affine are, and another thing that I should have noted, all of the maps here were actually piecewise linear, right? The projections, everything was linear. or at least on each individual simplex, they were linear. So I never needed to go out of the linear world. So Cn affine is simply linearly embedded, or more precisely, embedded in an affine way. So linear would mean mapping 0 to 0, and I don't care about 0. So linearly embedded simplices inside the vector space V, right? But a linearly embedded simplex is simply the set of its corners, okay? So this is really the collection of all things of the form V0 up to Vn, where the Vi are all in the vector space. This defines the simplex. Okay? So really Cn affine are just Z things. Or more precisely, the vector space generated by such things. So I'm still allowing formal linear combinations. Okay? Now, on Cn affine, there is a boundary map. So there is a boundary map from Cn affine into Cn minus 1 affine, defined in exactly the same way, except you don't bother to compose with a map into a topological space. So in other words, the boundary of V0 up to Vn is simply sum minus 1 to the I, V0 up to Vi hat up to Vn. You just drop 1. Okay, sum of all ways of dropping 1. By the way, I never said that these vectors are different from each other. So things are still allowed to be singular, but now it's in the linear world. Okay? So all of this makes sense. And now I can tell you the content of the wanted poster that I gave you. Okay? Which I made years ago, and I basically haven't changed. Just printed it now. So what we want is two things. We want a subdivision map, and we want a certificate that subdividing causes no harm. So the subdivision map is called S, and the certificate is called T. So let me explain. So we want S and T going S going from Cn, you know, from this point on, since I will be working only in the affine world, I will drop the word affine. Okay? So we want S going from Cn to Cn, okay, temporarily I'll add affine again. Okay? So that's sort of the subdivision. Okay? And T going from Cn affine into Cn plus 1 affine. So T is sort of the certificate that we've done nothing wrong. The certificate that we've done nothing wrong should have the property that it lives in one dimension up, because it's the thing whose boundary is the difference between before subdivision and after subdivision, right? So it lives in one dimension up. So that's why I need T going to here. And I need the following properties. Such that. So, let me just copy and but then explain each one. So, both S and T map simplices to simplices of smaller support, of lesser support, or equal to, of lesser support. So, I mean, more precisely, S and T map a single simplex into a big linear combination of simplexes, but I want each simplex in the linear combination to be contained in the simplex that was the domain. Okay? So I want, you know, if S of sigma is a sum of lots and lots of sigmas, AI sigma I, I want the support of the sigma I's to be contained in sigma. Why? Because at the end of the day, I do want to map it into topology. So I want I want to subdivide in the domain, but then I want to map it to the standard topology. And my maps are my sigma, now I'm using sigmas in two slightly different languages. I mean, over there, sigma means this simplex, and in topology, sigma means the map. But anyway, if I want to subdivide in the domain and I want it to still make sense, I can only subdivide within what I started from. The map sigma only makes sense on the original simplex. Okay? So that's property number two. Number one. Property number two is I want both should commute with affine linear maps. So maybe I will not say why right now, but the meaning is, you know, if you have a simplex here and you map it via an affine linear transformation L to another simplex here, I want the subdivision of this one to map to the subdivision of that one. Okay? Reasonable requirement. Now, the two crucial requirements. So, S breaks... Okay. So what I want to say is that S... What I really want to say is that S breaks a simplex of any simplex to tiny pieces whose size is epsilon times the original size. Well, I'm not going to achieve it, but I'm going to achieve something which is good enough. Namely, I want to say that S breaks any sigma inside CN affine into... it's going to be some AI sigma I such that the diameter, such that for every I, the diameter of sigma I is less than n over n plus 1 times the diameter of sigma. Why n over n plus 1? Because that's what I can achieve. But why is it good enough? This is a bit less than 1. So it means that if I iterate the procedure, so if I break again and again and again, eventually I'll go as small as I wish. I might have to iterate more times if the simplex is high dimensional. Okay? And then the last property. So the boundary of S, boundary composed with S is equal to S composed with boundary. S minus the identity is equal to T sigma plus, T boundary plus boundary T. So I've gone a little bit over time, so maybe I'll explain only schematically why these matter and then do it in detail. Okay? So why do these matter? This basically means that subdivision will be a chain map, so it will define, so it will induce a map on homology. And this is the same condition as in homotopy, as when we define homotopy. So, except the left-hand side is subdivision minus the identity. So this will say that the subdivision map is the same map as the identity. And so it would be done. Okay, let's take a break until 6:15 and then do the remaining details.